If it's time to refinance, talk to BOQ. Visit boq.com.au/better.
We're going out on a limb here, Marto. We're following you out onto a crazy limb. This could either work spectacularly or
mean
the demise. Exactly. Exactly right.
It wasn't meant to go on radio, though, Ed. Yes, I just told you that I think I've got a developing ladder dog, Ted the dog, who's my dog, 10-month-old Kelpie. I was painting the ceiling the other day, 3-metre-high ceiling, so he got up to about the 5th rung with the ball because all he wants to do in life is chase a ball. And I thought, oh, my God, I've got a ladder dog. Because I can remember years ago, a mate of mine had a ladder dog. We were building a deck up the coast in sand at Peridgian. And we turned around and Warwick the dog, he was a Kelpie Border Collie, he was standing next to us. He said, what happened there? How did Warwick get up here? No stairs. He climbed a ladder about 3 metres.
I can tell you what happened. It was a case of...
Dogs on ladders. Dogs on ladders.
All right.
Oh, let's play this funny game. 1-3-3-5-3.
No one will ring.
Yes,
I know.
They will. Jared of Brackenridge.
Jared.
Hello.
What talk us through it, dog and a ladder?
I'm a painter, and about, I don't know, 6 or 8 years ago when he was a bit younger, I was up on a 6-foot trestle. Yeah. 6-metre trestle, actually.
Jesus, yeah.
He was whinging around the bottom because he just liked being next to me. We were really close. I felt this big shake, and I looked down because I thought I was going to fall, and me Staffy had managed to get up the 4th rung.
Dogs on ladders. Dogs on ladders.
And then what happened?
Well, then I panicked and ran down to try and get him.
Oh.
Knocked us all off the trestle.
Oh, he would have made it up to the plank, I'm sure.
Mate, he was me best mate, and I swear that's what his aim was just to get up there and be with me and see what I was doing, eh? He was such a good dog.
What was his name?
Bronxy.
Okay. This is Jared. Well played, mate.
Dogs on ladders.
Oh, yeah.
Dogs on ladders.
Yeah, and it's gone absolutely ballistic. Oh, we could do this all morning. Luke from Carindale, what happened, mate?
Mate, yeah, I was a young fella, only about 13, 14. Climbed up on my neighbour's roof, he was an old fella, giving him a hand to clean out the gutters on his roof. Yeah. Probably up about 14, 16-foot ladder. Mm. And there on the other side, clean out. And then all of a sudden, I look behind me and there's the dog with his front paws up on the gutter having a look
dogs
at me.
Dogs on
checking
ladders.
Out what I was doing.
Dogs
how
on
did
ladders.
You get him down, though? Did he know how to get...
I had to pick him up and he sat up on the roof for a while and gave us a bit of a hand.
I've never seen a dog walk down a ladder.
Yeah. I had to carry him down. That was the fun part.
What sort of dog, Luke, just for the record?
Cattle dog, mate. Cattle dog.
Nice. Cattle dog. Great work, Luke. Yeah. Well played. Here's Greg from Ipswich. Give it to us, Greg.
Yeah, actually he had a dog. He didn't climb a ladder, but he walked across monkey bars at playgrounds.
Jesus, give the sting anyway. Got to have the sting anyway because it's so fun.
Monkey bars are horizontal ladders,
dogs on ladders. Dogs on ladders.
Wow. How did he get up there, though? Greg?
It was one of those ones that had like the 30-degree monkey bars up to the horizontal.
What was his name, Greg?
Oh, I can't remember. He disappeared about 2 weeks later. He went walkabout, never came back.
Oh, because how good would they be on Ninja Warrior on Channel 9?
The dog version of Ninja Warrior. That would work a treat. Thank you, Greg.
Great. Greg, we'll play. Here's Wazza.
Hey, young guys.
Yeah, good, mate.
You got one?
Yeah, mate. I got one I was living down at Willow Point as a young fella.
Yeah.
And their old man Leo, he had a boat out in the water there. And there was this red bitter, he called it Boof. And Boof used to sleep on the top of the crow's nest on the rear mast.
On the mast? How did he get up there?
He climbed up the ladder. There was a rope. Oh, it's not a rope ladder, a wire ladder. Okay. And he'd climb up there and go to sleep in the crow's nest. Yeah.
Dogs on ladders.
Dogs on wire ladders.
Dogs on ladders.
Dogs on lookout. That's fantastic, Wazza. And
there's been a lot of ladder dogs in Brisbane with so many people ringing. We've got to keep pushing on.
Dave from Drewvale. Dave, what happened, mate?
Hey, guys. Hey, when I was a young fella, I had a beautiful little dog. She's only bitter, but she's a lovely little dog named Tess. And I had a weekend job at the time as a boilermaker. I used to get out the quarry and do work of my own. And on a Sunday, as I mostly did on my own, so I took the little dog with me. And I'd be pulling the welding leads up onto the catwalks. We're talking 15, 20 feet in the air.
Hey.
And back then, in those days, those ladders, they weren't proper ladders with platforms on them. They they were made out of 20mm round bar, but I'd lift the lid and I'd be up there welding. I'd look around, she'd be there right behind me. She'd climb these bloody ladders.
Dogs on ladders.
Dangerous ladders. Dogs risking their necks.
What sort of dog was it, Dave?
A bitzer.
She's a little bitzer. She's a bit of bull terrier, a little bit of staffy, all sorts of stuff. She's a beautiful little dog. One day she fell off and this slowed her up a bit, but she came off one of them, landed on the bonnet of an F100 and dinged the bonnet. You know how tough they were, so...
Yeah, dogs on ladders.
Dave, you can hold that story for our dogs on bonnets. Yeah, dogs on bonnets.
Thank you, Dave. Brent of Thornlands, you got a dog on a ladder.
I certainly did. I used to have a young blue heeler pup that couldn't stay off the bloody thing. So I was an apprentice electrician and we used to be able to take her to sites back in the day. And you turn around on the second level as you're roughing in all of the wiring into the stud frames and so on, and there the dog would be climbing up the ladder and running around the second story.
Dogs on ladders.
Electricians. Even dogs on ladders. Come up one side of the ladder and then go straight back down.
Ah, righto. We've had
whoa,
it.
Whoa.
Yeah, you talked over the dogs on ladder, but that was worth it. Do you just say you've had a dog that walked down a ladder?
Yes. Yeah, a double side of steps, Marto.
So it'd go straight, it'd go front down, which is tough.
It would. Wow. It eventually taught itself how to get down because you turn around, there'd be a set of steps in the room and it'd be on top of them.
You know what? That dog's so smart. You should have given it a paintbrush. So, right, you do that. You're going.
I did think of teaching it what some tools were so I could go and fetch them.
Do better than some of those fools on the block, anyway.
Thanks Brent. And Bruce. Bruce of Highvale, an apprentice plumber with a dog on a ladder, yeah?
Yeah, when I was plumbing back in New Zealand, I was an apprentice to the boss of a dog called Bruno. And we'd do a lot of roofing, so he'd just toddle on up the roof. Up on the roof, up on the ladder, no problems at all.
Dogs on ladders.
What's he doing up there?
Dogs on ladders.
And what did he do? I love these dogs on ladders. Yeah, what do they do when they get up? What do they do when they get up the ladder? Do they announce themselves like wagging their tail, or do they just sit there going like, yeah, well, what? What do you want?
You pretty much just feel them just licking the back of your leg. You're like, what are you doing up here, Bruno? And you just go, oh, shit, we have to take them down because this one's too steep. You're going to end up down the bottom pretty fast.
I love it.
Thank you, everyone.
This has been the best.
Absolutely fantastic. Make sure that you hear next week at this time.
What do we got?
For Cats on Treadmills.
I don't think we'd get it.
Last night, the Bachelorette, Sophie's got them down to her final three. It is Jared, the winery creep. It is Apollo, the 24-year-old magician from the Gold Coast, who's just a lovely guy. Tiff says that when we're watching it, I said, do you want to end up with Apollo? And she says, yeah, for one night. And then
That's how Kath is. I've never heard her talk about a bloke like it.
He's very sweet.
To run her hands down his abs.
Okay, yes, he does look good too.
He's wonderful. And then there's old Moneybags Stew, who's, I sent a tweet out last night with a picture of Mr. Burns sitting in his house saying Stew patiently waiting for Sophie to come over. And a bloke replied to me that said, yeah, that bloke's married and he shoots blanks, which I thought is a wonderful description of Stew. Yes, he's separated, Robin, but he's not divorced, is he?
No, he's not. And from my take on the show last night, it's basically because they're still arguing about money because he is worth about $500 million, or his family is anyway.
More than that, perhaps.
Yeah.
Now, this is Sophie. You know, she's always on about how there's a tension with Sophie because she's famous and she's on this show trying to talk to sort of so-called ordinary blokes. And this is how she described it last night.
Someone that loves me, the real me, and couldn't care less about fame or fortune.
Go on. Yeah. Say what you're going to say because I'm going to agree with you because I yelled at the television when I saw that last night.
Well, fame is Stew. I mean, fortune is Stew, and Stew is desperate to be famous. He's already been on another TV show. So he was on an SBS one about I'm going to be homeless even though I'm rich. I'll be homeless for a day, then I'm going back to being rich. Oh, that's what it should have been called. Yeah. anyway, they had the home visits, guys, and then she started, Marto, at Creepy Jared's Creepy Norman Bates-style winery.
You know what? And you know I'm not a fan because Kath's not a fan, so she's instructed me. I'm not allowed to like Jared. But I thought it went all right for a while until the mum separated her from the pack. Well, they're all trying so hard to be impressive. Then the mum, and wasn't she weird? Who singles out the girlfriend who comes over, singles her out and said, let's go for a chat. And they went downstairs to what was looked like a dungeon.
I was just going to ask Sophie if she wants to come for a little wander down the stairs and have a little chat.
So I'm walking down the stairs into a dungeon, but I come back. At least I died as I lived, surrounded by wine.
She likes a drink, eh?
Yeah, she does. And the cellar was very impressive for Jared.
Wasn't it?
I mean, it would be enough to go, maybe I could work my way
through
this.
What'd you make of that, mother? Too much.
A bit like him, really.
Yeah, that's hard to... Yeah, that's a mummy's boy.
That is when she saw him and she hugged him for so long. And then sort of said, yeah, whatever to Sophie. She thinks that Sophie's not good enough for her little Jared.
Yes, that's right.
That's the vibe she's giving off. Whereas Australia's going, well, maybe you two should just end up together.
Okay, come on. You had to think. Didn't Jake's family, they were weird. I mean, he went last night. And what's his name?
Blake. The one over in Perth.
Yeah, the guy who, when he left, he was swearing at Sophie, which was just rude and obnoxious.
Before we got to him, though, they went down the coast. I think it's at the coast. So Apollo's in the box seat in many ways. I know there's 13 years difference in age, but they live at the Gold Coast. She obviously wants to stay at the Gold Coast. He lives down. He must live down the Kira end. You see that that shot where they...
I did see that.
Yeah, righto. Well,
yes.
What I was impressed was Apollo's grandma. She had a little bit of chipping away to say.
There's no problem with him at all. He's so natural.
Yeah.
And he's so loving. And honestly, you'll love him for all those things.
Grandma.
Put your teeth back in.
94-year-old Ellie, bless her cotton socks.
Wasn't she great? They were great.
She was a champion, but so...
Sorry, what were you talking about? Blake.
Oh, well, yeah, but I mean, I'm happy for you to keep walking through them. But Blake, yeah, I just found him revolting and obnoxious and hideous. And he was how he started. I mean, this is a bloke from Perth who, in his introduction, took selfies of himself on gym equipment.
Was that him?
Oh, yeah, how he lasted as long as he did anyway.
Well, because he was pitted against Jared as the two sort of battling for her. That's why they kept him around.
So are we still going with Stu? Is Stu going to... take them, even though he still needs to have a vasectomy reversal and is still married?
As Tiff keeps saying, basically what Sophie's perfect man is Stu's money on Apollo's body.
Yeah.
That's...
Can you do two of them in the room? Like
Apollo and Sophie
doing it
card.
While
Stu
watches...
card him.
While Stu throws money over their nude bodies.
I know that's what you want to do, but that's not as
all right, Blake. What
no coins, Stu. No coins, mate. They hurt.
Marto and Robin, Triple M.
Okay, this is a conversation I never quite thought that I would ever have in my entire radio career, but let's go. Because, and I really want to do a quick phone poll right here, right now, on 133353.
Yeah, the Wallabies will win.
No. Actually, I'm talking boobs versus butts. And this isn't just for blokes, because there's been a brand new kind of study put out saying that millennials... and yes, particularly millennial blokes, but women as well, are preferencing butt implants over boob implants. And apparently it's a thing with millennials that they prefer to look and have a nice rounded butt. So the chest is no longer the thing that people are spending money on. So honestly, butt versus boobs. And to make you feel more comfortable, let us ask the three blokes in the studio. Marto.
Oh, no. No, no, no. These are the sort of things that get me in trouble when I get home.
Exactly.
Yeah. What?
Kath, are you listening?
This is a pop culture question. If it is changing, Iggy Azalea, Australian rapper, has spent massive amounts of money on her chest and her nose, but claims her butt is all hers.
Well, I'm happy with whoever you're talking to. That girl. Iggy, is it a girl?
Yeah.
Iggy Azalea. You know the problem? Understand. The Kardashians have started this. That Kim Kardashian. And I can't cop big bumps. It just means you haven't been doing enough exercise to me.
But I think it's the opposite, because if you are very, very fit, then and
Serena
if you're a girl
Williams.
And you do a lot, well, that's you end up with a really strong
diff.
Bum and a diff, and it's and that to me says health and fitness, and that's I like that type of thing. Here comes Adam from the Gold Coast. Oh, Adam, you're from the Gold Coast. Go on, just say boobs.
Definitely boobs.
Yeah, Goldie. The white pointers. That's okay. Hey, Adam, how are they looking on the Goldie? Because it is the breast implant capital of the world.
And it's Gold Coast 600 weekend.
Yeah, fantastic. And that's where I'm going, I think. Right.
Yeah, that's your
Can I just check?
Hold on. While Adam's there, Robin, well, you're saying people under what age are saying
under
bums?
Under 25.
Under 25 are saying bums. Are you over 25, Adam?
Most definitely, Marto.
Righto.
Okay, yep, well, let's... Ads. Jeff of Boondall. Is it a butt? Is it a boob?
No, I'm an arse guy, guys.
You're an arse guy.
Okay.
I'm an arse guy, guys.
Didn't think when you all got up this morning you'd be saying that on Triple M, did you? Are you under 25, Jeff?
I'm 30, man.
Oh, there you go. 30, so okay. Maybe I need to push the age up. But can I just also say that this is not just a blokey conversation. So, women, come on, would you pay money to get your butt done? I mean, would blokes pay money to get their butts done? I don't know.
What do they put in there?
Silicon.
Then you got to sit on it.
There's an awful video on YouTube of a woman whose butt implant has turned.
Turned what?
Oh, it's awful.
What does it turn into?
What's the attacker? Is Andy from Stapleton? Andy, first things first, how old are you?
Oh, yeah, good, mate. Nah, boobs for sure.
How old, Andy? How old?
I don't want to look at a chick with a couple of soccer balls walking behind her.
Andy, answer the question. How old are you?
57.
There you go.
All right, Andy. You're old school, buddy.
Old school.
No, no.
That's a yellow card for Andy.
Oh, Brandy?
No. You went one too far. You went one too far. Andy.
Home ground ref, Andy. Sorry, mate.
We waited, though, till we found out how old he was.
Hey, Dad. Hayden, you're at Narangba. What is it?
Mate, I'm a bum man, but a real bum. Not a bum that you can eat bloody dinner off.
Now, Haydo, now talk us, how old are you?
24.
All right.
There it is.
He's in the kill zone. Hey, Hayden, give me a person whose bum you admire.
Not thought of that yet.
Okay, Sally Pearson. There you go. I'll nominate one.
Oh, yeah. No,
why not?
That.
Thank you.
Wow, that's a good one.
Well, because she's strong and she's a hurdler, so she's got an absolutely taut derriere. But
well,
it's
I'm
natural.
Happy with them.
You okay with that? Totally. Okay.
Well, give me more photos.
Yeah, and excuse me, we're not leaving here until you both weigh in on this conversation, Ed Cavalli, because you just quickly threw to the calls.
My
wife's just
had a baby, so I love post-pregnant bodies.
Yeah, they're great.
Brendo,
nice. I'm a bottom guy.
How old? And you're younger, aren't you, Brendo?
Yeah, No, but they always used to be the last bastion of authenticity, I found. But now, it upsets me that, you know, everyone's getting implants.
Do you remember
now.
Spinal Tap?
I do.
They sang Big Bottom, She's Got 'em, Talk About Bum Cakes, My Girl's Got 'em.
Yep.
They were big bum.
We did this whole segment just so we could get back to Spinal Tap.
Who won? Who won on the phone? I reckon boobs won because we
only
got older blokes rang us. Yeah, fair enough.
Yes, only indeed. Just. But it does go to show that the younger guys.
The worm's turning, isn't it?
Yep. It's a bum
Is
thing.
It possible that you could take the implants out of your boobs and just jam them into your bum cheek?
Alternators.
Why wouldn't you get them for Christmas and just be able, why can't you put them on the outside? Putting them on the inside seems like too much trouble.
Good stocking filler.
Yeah. Marto. You know, the Wonder Bra. Wonder Undies.
Okay. It's Marto, Ed and Robin. Oh, Brisbane's Triple M. That's your fault, Robin, that this happened.
The following is an official announcement from the Australian Government.
Over the past few years, thought crime has reached record levels. Subversion is rife. Our enemies are everywhere.
Trust no one.
Luckily, there is an answer.
Peter Dutton.
No, not Peter Dutton.
Thank God.
Introducing a new series on Podcast One that interrogates the real threats to Australia, like John Safran, Rob Sitch, and children's author Andy Griffiths.
Oh, God, I love those Treehouse books.
Who will survive? Who will fail? Introducing Extreme Vetting with The Chaser.
The Chaser.
The only show with the power of life and death over its guests.
Listen at podcastone.com.au or via the Podcast One app.
What have you been saying about me all day today?
Well, last night, 6 o'clock, you usually are at home cooking dinner, watching the news. But last night, you were on a train home from Ipswich chugging some beer.
I wasn't sure whether you're allowed to drink beer, but after what I went through yesterday, I figured it was A-OK. God, that was a long day.
Remember what did you do? You left here. You went racing out of here at 9 o'clock. You had your push bike and you were getting in the car with a famous footballer's brother.
Righto. Actually, you were paying attention. That was very
good.
That
was as much as I got it.
Did you see the bike? It was a beautiful giant. Actually, I better thank, because that wasn't my bike. Borrowed it from a shop, giant, up the road here at North Quay. Wonderful bunch, Aaron. I better say that because that was a $10,000 bike I borrowed for a day.
Right. Mm.
went on this ride, and I don't do many of these things. You know, I ride each day, but I've never done a big one. I went, these blokes have been going from Sydney. They did doing a Sydney to Brisbane bike ride. And a mate of mine is a builder here in Brisbane, Phil. He got me into it. He said, mate, you got to do this. And it must have been a weak moment. I said, that sounds terrific. It's to help seriously ill kids, and especially they're trying to help out a guy, Dr. Andy, who was on the big ride. You know, these guys have been going from Sydney to Brisbane. I just jumped in and did 90, 100 Ks yesterday, which was tough enough. These blokes have been doing it every day to raise money to try. He is specifically a brain surgeon for kids. Mm. These kids that have brain tumours. And there were guys on the ride whose kids had died of leukaemia, who'd survived brain cancer, and he was one of the guys just trying to get money. Because he's got two researchers he pays. 50% of his time, this Dr. Andy, is spent curing kids, like physically doing surgery and everything else on them. Yeah. And the other 50% is he employs two researchers trying to find a cure and then shares all this info with people overseas. These are, you know, we do fundraisers for little this, that, or the other. We're doing sporting clubs. But these guys were so into their thing. So it's all the money's going to Children's Hospital Foundation.
Wow.
So who picked you up?
Corey Oates' brother, Matt, who's a chippy, and he had the ute. I've jumped in that. And I said, where are we going? He said, well, they left Warwick this morning. So I've got the rap. And we just went on this road. We were out in the middle of nowhere near Aratula, and the cops wouldn't let us go on the main highway. So we were zigzagging through Grandchester, Laidley, in through the back into Ipswich late yesterday afternoon. That's where I found myself. It was incredible. I love these guys, their passion. If you do it, hold on, I've got the wristband on. 1200kmsforkids.com. Go to that and please donate. Old people, it's sad when they die, but when kids die of cancer, it's really tragic.
Awful.
And these guys, they're lawyers, there's doctors, there's all sorts of people, builders on this ride, and a lot of them been touched by cancer, as a lot of us have.
There's only other part to this story is how did you end up on a train with two beers in Ipswich?
Well, they stopped in Ipswich last night and I had to come here. This morning, so, and I'm a big scab, and I don't do cabs from Ipswich.
Where do you get the beers?
Oh, well, we had them after we got off the bike, put them in my bag. And
on the train from Ipswich to Brisbane at 6 p.m, were you the only one drinking?
There was a couple. There's a couple of people already on the berth.
Happy hour.
Happy
hour.
Marto, Ed and Robin, Triple M.
Wow.
It's illegal.
Marto, Ed and Robin's Sports All In.
Well, we'll be talking to Mark Scaife, legend of V8 supercars, shortly. He'll give us the complete wrap. But I'll tell you what, it's on down there this weekend. Practice today, qualifying, etc. Top 10 shootout tomorrow and Sunday.
Understand, though, don't you, that unlike any other sporting event that goes for a couple of hours and we're all, like, understanding of our blokes wanting to do that, this goes an entire friggin' weekend after the last Bathurst weekend.
Hey, there's so many stories.
Now I've said I'll get over it and move on.
I'll tell you this little story. See that little fella there? Alex Rulo's his name. He just turned 17. He's a Perth kid, okay? He's driving.
On his P's?
Well, that's where the story's interesting. I didn't realise because I met him last year when he was in the reserve grade V8s. Been driving in that since he was 14, okay? So, all right, he's been driving at 300 kilometres an hour around track since he's 14 years of age.
How's he legally allowed to do that?
Well, you can do that. As long as you've got your CAMS licence, Confederation of Australian Motorsport licence, you can drive in races. But here we go. I was actually nervous for my driving test and failed the first two times.
Jesus.
I know, sticking to the speed limit really sucks.
Is that a campaign?
Speeding wasn't the reason. It took him three attempts to be given the green light to begin driving on P-plates. First fail was for almost pulling into a no-entry zone. The second because the instructor thought that I didn't look, but I reckon I did. Good on you.
What's his name, just so I know?
Alex Rulo, and down on his driver profile, because they all go what they drive, or Chevy, or you know, Holden SS, he's got his personal vehicle as the school bus. He's still at school.
Oh,
what a
God.
Great story.
That's a great story.
Now, quick one, though. Chris Lynn has signed the first $1 million deal in Big Bash.
In Australian Big Bash?
Yeah. He's doing a long deal with the Brisbane Heat.
Whoa.
He's also just signed on as Chris Gale's wingman, so that'll be interesting. But why should we talk sport when I've just flown into Brisbane? He's just stepped off a plane. Please welcome to finally wrap up AFL Trade Week the way he's been actually in there the whole week. Please welcome Lawrence Mooney.
Yes, just stand aside. I'm a pretty big deal around here.
What? Settle
down,
mate. What are you doing?
Now, yeah. Moon, you want to talk AFL Trade Week. What were the big moves for you?
Well, for me, I'm an Essendon supporter, so we've got three big deals. Adam Saad, we've signed from...
The Gold Coast.
Gold Coast,
yeah,
yes.
Let me help you out here.
Devon Smith from Greater Western Sydney.
Yep, yep.
And Jake Stringer, the man that couldn't settle after the grand final.
Now, what about Luke Hodge to the Brisbane Lions? Your thoughts on
Well,
that?
Luke Hodge to the Brisbane Lions is very much like Lawrence Mooney to Brisbane Breakfast. Just shipping in an old bloke at the end of his career to see out his days in the sunshine. There's some great parallels there,
isn't there? And both of those men are light and easy ambassadors, which is exciting.
That's right. I am the before and haven't been signed yet, and Luke Hodge is the after.
Hey, thank you, Lawrence Mooney.
Thank you.
Yes, what would you
is Moon
like?
Still
what?
There? What? Moon?
Yeah.
Hey, listen. You know the Friday Fun one we do.
Mm.
You know what Ed's is today? It's Russell Crowe and 30-odd foot of Grunt. He's thinking he'll get a vote.
Well, here comes Russ now. Yeah, g'day, Ed. I've just finished putting a durry out outside. I was pretty stoked to hear that you've voted me. Thanks.
Yeah, I am. And also, I just wanted to say I loved your performance in Virtuosity with Denzel Washington.
Well, Denzel and me, we're very close. You know, I like all the African-American actors. Is that the way to say it?
All right, we might let Rusty go now. Thank you.
We cannot have a sports all-in without talking about the Bledisloe.
Oh, listen, you know the Wallabies are going to win.
Do it later.
No Beauden Barrett, no Sonny Bill Williams. Sonny Bill Williams is at the... He's going down. He's on the descending part of his track. What else have we got? New jersey.
Your childhood
See
enthusiasm.
The new jersey? First home that's in indigenous jersey. Seal those water holes, the round things. Yeah, they all mark. There's been 14 Aboriginal indigenous players play for the Wallabies over history.
That's nice. That's cool.
Isn't that nice? And Stephen Moore, of course, I used to coach him at school when he was a young kid. Yeah, he'll be playing his last test in
there we go. We might get
Australia.
That's the fade.
That's a bit better, isn't it?
Okay, can you...
It was cute
when it started.
Hasn't been a Bledisloe Cup in Brisbane since 2014. That night we got beaten by 1 point and Ewan McKenzie resigned the same night. We're going to win tomorrow night.
You are still holding the faith and I like your childlike enthusiasm.
Oh, shut up.
Well, come on. Even
We've
Ed doesn't agree
a lot
with
of
you.
Lessons. All right. We know there's a lot of Kiwis listen to us in the morning, and I just want to acknowledge them. Claire, you are from Christchurch, and we love you. Claire, our newsreader.
I am.
I've brought you in here for a reason, because I'm trying to put together a haka choir. I love the haka. Everyone loves the haka.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's unfair when they do it on the field, but would every Kiwi know the haka?
Oh, yeah, rough enough, I think, yep.
Like words, like to be able to follow along at home, like you'd know your favourite song?
Yeah, well, as good as I, I think so.
Where do you learn it, Claire? Where are you instructed in it? Do you sort of pick it up as you go along, or is there a moment in everyone's life?
It's traditionally a male thing, so men perform it. So if you're from Māori culture, you're more likely to learn it as a kid, like actually, because you'll do it amongst your family.
Does the women's team do it?
No. Women have different hakas and different calls and it gets a bit complicated. But generally, you learn it sitting around the telly with your dad in the 80s watching the All Blacks in their glory days.
No. Now, listen, in 1973, there's a thing on YouTube when they didn't know the haka. It didn't come in until Buck Shelford in about late 80s. So I used to play against him. He finally said, listen, let's take this haka seriously. Because there was just a bunch of white blokes who didn't know the words in those days. And then he said, this is a big part of who we are as Kiwis, didn't he? And from there, everyone knew it.
That is right. And it is a big thing. I mean, and coming up against it must be pretty daunting, I would imagine. So
it is. It's scary. Now, listen, it's a kamati. Now, that's just one haka, but that's the one they traditionally use before they develop their own one.
Yeah.
How does it go? Can you explain it to us?
Yeah. So kamati is the first one, and it's probably the one I would say that Kiwis love the most.
Yeah.
So it's the one that's been around the longest. Now you see the different ones with the different movements, but the traditional kind of thigh-slapping kamati is the oldest one and the one that kids and most Kiwis would most likely know.
Okay, so how confident are you in getting yourself through the haka because...
There's tis tuckets up for grabs.
Oh, for a ticket. I'll do anything.
We want a haka choir.
Oh, we're going to put a haka choir. We probably want you and four Kiwis with you and you'll all win a ticket, a tus ticket. For the Bledisloe.
All right.
What do you think about that? I'll even give you one. You want to go, I bet.
I think I can do it.
You're a Kiwi. Of course you want to go.
Okay.
All right.
133353 is the number. You got to know the haka to get yourself a Bledisloe Cup ticket.
Come on, Kiwis.
And you have to be an official New Zealander.
Ooh. What's an official New Zealander?
No, because you'll get people like us just doing bad accents to try and go.
But if they do the haka, that's okay. Thankfully, we've got Claire here to lead the haka. Kia ora.
Newsroom.
Kia ora.
Yeah, a good one. That's generally Kiwi stuff. And we're looking for how many, Rob?
Well, we've got 4 tickets to go and see the test. So,
Jesus, that's bad. Tust. Test tickets.
Anyway,
that is horrific.
Yeah, thank you. That's much better. Okay, Andy, Kiwi.
Yep.
Come on, keep talking.
Andy, what do you think about your new Prime Minister?
I don't know. I don't know anything about him.
He's Kiwi.
Fraud?
He's
a Kiwi. Is he a Kiwi?
Well, say hello all at the same time. We got Andy and Rob from Birkdale, Iwi the Kiwi from Crestmead, and Alex from Acacia Ridge. All say hi at the same time.
Kia ora.
Yep.
Kia ora. Hello. Kia ora. Wait, whoa. Okay.
Kia ora, brother.
Yep.
Kia ora.
Good. Okay, I think they're all Kiwis.
Who's got a silver fern tattoo? Anyone?
Me.
No.
Yeah, it could be one.
That's a Kiwi.
No, not me. No.
Okay, boys, you know how to do this. Claire is going to lead you out, but we need you boys to all do the haka together. There are Bledisloe Low Cup tickets on the line, and believe me, if you don't do it well enough, we've got a whole line of Aussies who would love these tickets.
Yep.
So, Claire, are you ready?
I'm as ready. Work with me, guys. Come on.
You talk them in. It is your game.
All right, ready? Kamate. Come on, guys.
Kamate.
Everyone get some tickets. Does
all or nothing?
All or nothing.
Yes. All or nothing. Go All Blacks.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
You're all heading along. You're going to the Wallabies. Yeah. All Blacks. It's tomorrow at Suncorp Stadium.
What do you think of that?
Tickettech.com.au/Wallabies.
What do you think of that, crew? Yes, I tried to get you.
What?
What do you reckon, crew? What do you think of that? You got tickets.
Yay.
Oh, sick. Awesome. Yay.
Not one said choice.
Choice.
Well, wouldn't one of them say?
Yeah. You're all be going together. Like you all get a single ticket each, so you're all going to be sitting together. We want a video of you doing the haka there as well, okay?
No worries.
Sweet. Is there any chance you could wear something black? I don't know whether many Kiwis own any black. Gold Coast 600 on this weekend, and today marks the practice round, and then it's all on this weekend, the Concrete Canyon, they call it down the coast. And with us to preview, Mark Scaife, supercars legend. Scaife, can I start by saying hello and asking, what do they have to do to change the car from the long races to the road track down the coast?
Good morning. Yes, plenty. I mean, you couldn't get two racetracks more dissimilar in terms of going from Bathurst to the Gold Coast. Bathurst, big, fast, flowing, you know, undulating style of racetrack. And this one, as you pointed out, it's a concrete canyon. It's manhole covers, painted lines, all the different road surfaces, you know, a thousand things that can go wrong around here. And it's a circuit that, in terms, I don't want to be too technical, but they're very short corners, so you have to set the cars up to be really agile and responsive, and that's a lot different to Bathurst.
I know the Gold Coast real estate fairly well, so where's the scariest corner?
Well, the scariest corner probably is turn one. I mean, the way that the cars approach that's 265k, so it's very fast.
Jesus.
To a corner at the turning point's about 110k. So if you mess that one up, real easy to hit the fence. And given that we've seen a bit of forecast for the weekend with water, I always say if you want great supercar racing, just add water. It's certainly not the case at Bathurst, but this is wild in the dry, let alone wet.
Yeah, but where is that on the where is that surface? Well, where is that first
Ernie
China?
Avenue?
So the main straight. So Gold Coast Highway. So basically you come straight through a big, long kink, and then you get pretty much to the front of the Marriott. If you know the real estate well, they're pretty much to the front of the Marriott.
Turn left.
The road goes to the left, and that's where Fabian Coulthard had that massive crash there last year. We've also seen over the course of the IndyCar days plenty of big crashes on the way into there too. So it's 265k, probably one of the most difficult regions of the circuit.
Hey, Scaife, do you see that on the MotoGP, there's that Australian bloke that broke his leg 15 days ago and he's going to race. He's now going to race. What is there? And so he, obviously you got a broken leg. You can still ride a motorcycle. What is the worst injury that you ever continued to drive with?
Can I just say, firstly, those blokes are MADDD. They're mad.
They are
absolutely mad. Temporary Australians, I call them. how it is. Worst one for me, probably, I had a big crash at Eastern Creek in at the start of 1995, and I broke a couple of vertebrae and broke my ribs and was in hospital for a couple of weeks. I was able to go back and drive, obviously, with those back injuries because, you know, there's enough bracing and the seat was reasonably good and stuff. So that wasn't too bad. But in terms of pain, I don't know, you would have had, Marta, you would have had broken ribs or rib cartilage or something over the journey. And you know yourself, they're just, those injuries, they just take so long to heal and they're debilitating when, you know, you cough or you laugh or whatever. It's a toughie. You can't breathe, exactly.
More importantly, now you and Russell Engel will be there all day Saturday. It'll be a big, long day. Saturday night, who are you two more likely to go and see? Because the rock concert down at the Broadwater is a big part of it. Are you more a Darryl Braithwaite or a Delta type of guy?
They're both on the Friday night.
Oh, they're on Friday night.
Rock night. That's fine, Marta. We're fine with that. We'll do that tonight. Hey, firstly, the first point is having to hang around with Russell Engel the whole weekend. Wow, that's a sick surprise. Where you reckon that is?
That's tough.
He's a Delta guy, isn't he?
He's definitely Delta, and I'm much more of your horses, man. I'm
That's all we needed.
All right, Mark Scaife, Supercars legend. Fox Sports is going to show is every practice, qualifying, and the race from the Vodafone.
I'm not watching until it starts raining.
Okay, well, you won't have long to wait, I don't think. It's live and it's ad break free. Good on you, Scaife. We'll speak to you soon.
Thanks, guys. See you later.
End of an era. Everyone in here has driven owned a Holden at some stage, and we've been lamenting about it. But let's go live to the factory, the Holden factory in Elizabeth, South Australia, where Mike Smithson is reporting for Channel 7. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, guys. Yes, it's a sad day, but also, in some ways, a happy day. There'd be about 150 punters who have turned up before dawn just to be out the front of Holden on the day that it closes, and they're driving everything from old Taranas to Kingswood. There was even one, I call it sort of baby puke green vacationer about 1970 with a white Venetians in the back window. But people are sad but want to commemorate the day and remember the day because it's a kick in the guts for South Australia and, as you say, for the Australian car industry.
So the last car that comes off the production line is a what?
Well, it's a red Commodore, I know that much, because photos have been leaked for the last week. That's what the workers are turning up today. It's not really a work day. I think they will go out and have fun afterwards, but to really just to see the last car come off. I think that's been going like at snail's pace for about the last 3 days. It certainly hasn't been the usual 175 cars a day coming off. So it's just sort of inched forward and will come through a roller door and everyone will stand in front of it, have their photo taken. But, hey, guys, we've been speaking to workers as they've turned up for what is essentially the last shift today. And it's a real mixture between some are fairly angry that they no longer have a job. Others, well, they've seen it coming and they've made plans for the future. But, you know, all of them, it suddenly dawned on them, hey, this is it. We're not coming back here after today. So in that respect, sad day, but one that they want to remember as fondly as possible.
Where do you go after you work at the Holden factory? Like a process assembly line? Is it Subway? You're part of a team?
Well, obviously in South Australia, you look for a job anywhere you can get one because things are pretty grim down here. But look, we've got a defence industry here that is taking off. And if you're good working with machinery and engineering and everything else, surely there's a place for you there. But it's, you know, just one of those sad days. It's been 4 years coming. I stood out the same spot of the same factory 4 years ago when they announced the closure and thought, oh, that's a long way off. That's over the horizon. Not worry too much about that. Back here today and think, right, it's finally happening. And as you say, just about in everyone in Australia has either had a Holden or mum and dad or uncle or auntie or whoever. So, you know, it's just part of the Australian culture, isn't it?
talking to Mike Smithson, Channel 7 Adelaide, out the front of the Holden factory in Elizabeth, which is closing today. And Mike, what you said before is so true. It is the end of an era. Also, for this type of manufacturing, I don't think you're going to be doing reports out the front of a iPhone app factory that closes in 15 years' time. You know, the world has changed.
No, not unless I go to China or Malaysia or somewhere.
It's
look, manufacturing is for large scale. For instance, cars, you've got to manufacture 200,000 a year to make it profitable, to have an export market. And there goes someone.
Actually, we might let you go, actually, Mike, because we're going to run on. But hey, listen, Channel 7, you can see Mike's reports all day from out the front of the Holden factory in Elizabeth. Good on you, Mike. Thanks, mate.
Good on you, guys. Thanks.